the Gentle Rebel Podcast.
For introverts, highly sensitive people, and creative misfits.
Hello, welcome to the Gentle Rebel Podcast. How are you doing? Do you fancy a chat about letting go of what people think of us? Okay. It's something that's been on my mind a lot this week after the latest book club discussion that we had in The Haven at the weekend. We're currently reading The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. And this week's topic was around this idea of cultivating authenticity and letting go of what people think. Man, I mean, it's a big topic, to say the least. And I've just got a few things I want to share about it and some of my thoughts on it, which hopefully will help in some way. And if they don't, that's fine. So for those of you who haven't listened to the Gentle Rebel Podcast before, I'm Andy Mort. I'm a UK-based musician and writer and podcaster, obviously, professional slow coach as well. I work with kind of nurturing creative wholeheartedness into with individuals and small organizations. And if you're wondering what a gentle rebel is, I define gentle rebels as caring and compassionate people who feel things deeply and want to connect with their inner and outer worlds in sustainable and creative ways. And I guess my aim with this podcast is to find ways to kind of let go of the of some of those destructive desires from the world around us and pick up instead the courage to look deeper and to connect with the truly important stuff in our lives and in the world around us. So that's it in a nutshell. I really love this idea of letting go. I talk about it a lot. Like, you're probably bored of it if you've been listening to me for a while, but letting go is I don't know, it's so much softer and more gentle than the demand to stop or quit or whatever. You know, we all know that it's not great for us, for example, to be plugged in and dictated to by what other people think of us, to be kind of like influenced by what are others going to think of this, and then allow that to, you know, dictate the course of action that you take. Or also what, you know, what we're afraid other people will think of us. You might hear things like, I've read articles over the years like, stop caring about what people think of you. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah. But the truth is, we all do care what people think of us. You know, it's a natural human instinct that helps us to remain part of a group. You know, we're a social species, and our kind of main mechanism of survival is through cooperation and connection within a community. At that level, to not care about being seen by the rest of the group as an outsider is literally a death wish in some ways. So to stop caring wouldn't actually help us stop caring. I don't think, you know, we'd just, you know, when you say, right, you just stop caring what people think, you're not going to be able to stop caring what people think, but you can find ways to pretend that you don't care. And when we do things like that, we kind of further alienate ourselves from the group and more importantly from ourselves as well. You know, you've probably heard people say, like, oh, I just don't care what people think anymore. And to me, what that tells me is you really, really care what people think. And you're trying to convince yourself that you don't care. And often that's a real indication that they're operating from a real kind of ego point, an ego voice in their minds. So, yeah, what's the difference when it comes to letting go of what people think of us versus stopping caring what people think? Is this just a matter of language? Is this like a semantic issue? Maybe it is, I don't know. But I'm going to try and unpack what I think the difference is. Letting go starts with the acknowledgement that something is there, or that we're holding something, some part of this. And so I guess by removing the word caring from the equation, we can acknowledge and accept the truth that we naturally care what people think of us. So I guess it's letting go of the impact that caring what people think of us has on the way that we operate, the way that we show up. So what do the things that people think of us, like, when does that become a problem? When does it become a problem that we care about what people think. I suppose when we hold on to it, when we build our sense of who we are upon it and through it and using it to dictate our self-worth, you know, when that's defined by what people think of us, and the decisions that we make about the way that we live our lives, when our choices are made within this fog of what others are going to think of the thing that we've decided to do, we make choices based on a goal of gaining approval and acceptance and affirmation. We do things not because they are kind of the things we want to do or the things that feel right for us, the things that come from that heart of inner connectedness, but because we hope they will get us this kind of this thing from other people, this pat on the back, a little bit of respect or some power, you know, people talking about how great we are and, you know, spreading reputational love or whatever. And I mean, you might be hearing that and thinking, mate, no, I hate it when people talk about me, especially in public. Hearing praise is horrible. I really don't like attention being drawn to anything about me and anything I've done. In which case, the caring about what people think might be dressed up in kind of, I don't know, more humble clothes. We make choices based on a goal of avoiding being seen or noticed. You know, how can we shrink into the background and exist with a sense of anonymity where no one will notice us? So it's almost coming from a place of fearing what people will think. And I suppose many of us, probably most of us, live somewhere between these extremes. Like, we oscillate around them, sometimes acting out of a desire to be seen and accepted and affirmed in some way, while other times deciding, no, I'm not going to act because I of a fear of being seen, a fear of being criticized, a fear of being exposed in some way. So yeah, what are the consequences of living in either of these spaces, or the potential consequences? I guess we lose our sense of true self, or our authentic being, or who we really are, however we want to describe it or think about it. I don't, you know, some of those things might be more helpful to you than others. You might have a completely different way of thinking about that part of yourself, that authentic self. We had a fascinating discussion in the Haven, in that book club, about what true self is and how to know, you know, what's the difference between when you're being true and authentic and when you're acting from a place of that ego voice, that desire to be liked or that fear of being disliked. I love these sorts of conversations because they're like, I mean, just thinking about this stuff ties me up in knots. It's like, it's a bit like a wet bar of soap. You think you've got it in your hands and then you squeeze that tiny little bit too tight. You're like, oh yeah, no, I think I've got this. You squeeze a bit tighter and pew, it just flies across the room. And you're like, oh. It's hugely frustrating, yet also kind of really quite funny. It's that, you know, annoys your mum. Oh, please, come on. No, I just need to hold on to this thing. I thought I had it. And then it's just gone and sort of smashed the mirror. And I think that one of the reasons this is so difficult is because it shows up differently for everybody. You know, it's not something that can be really pinned down and described by language, especially with our limited set of words. So, you know, the idea of being able to pin down the difference between that ego voice and the self voice is to some degree impossible, especially as they sound kind of different for everybody. But what we can do, I suppose, is point to where we might observe them, how we might feel them, how we might experience them, what we might do to make more space to bring that authentic self to the front, to the core of our being and showing up and like living in the world, and yeah, listening out for that ego voice and observing it and seeing like the kind of role it plays in our lives. Like, what does it tell us to do? What does it tell us to shrink away from and all that sort of stuff? And I want to say, like, this, it can actually be quite fun. We can get a bit playful inside this arena. We can see how the ego voice really attempts to bend things out of shape for us. And you're like, dude, what what are you trying to get me to do? You know, it creates wild and fanciful stories. It tries getting us to really believe things about ourselves, about other people, about the world that are just really completely unhelpful and like not true at all. And if we're able to enter that space of, I don't know, of being behind that voice, of observing in a space beyond where that voice talks to us, we might actually be able to enjoy some of the things that we realize it's trying to convince us of or make us believe and make us act out of. The problem with living in the realm where we do or don't do, where that's kind of influenced by desire or fear of what people think of us, is that we kind of lose connection to what is truly important to us. If all our choices come from that place, we're internally alienated and dislocated. We're bent out of shape inside in order to fit in outside. But then the more that we try to fit in, the worse we feel. We seek more of the solution that actually causes more of the problem. Our ego says, right, what you need to drive harder for acceptance and approval and affirmation. Kind of force it out of people if you must. Right, let's get ourselves into a position of power. Then people will have to give us that and they'll make us feel better. Or on the other hand, it might tell us, that person's looking at us. They think we're an idiot. What have we got in our shopping? Oh man, they're looking at our shopping trolley. They think we shouldn't be eating what we're eating. Right, we're doing this online next time. And so on and so forth. We might enter new levels of, it might lead us down a path of social anxiety and reclusivity. Reclusivity, is that a word? I don't know. And I guess my go-to ego messaging is definitely, it takes me into that latter area. It is definitely more they're looking at us. Don't be noticed. Don't be the center of attention. And it really gets me when I'm feeling tired or a little bit vulnerable. It develops this weird hypersensitive paranoia. It's like, shrink down, mate. You realize everyone is looking at you. Everybody here thinks you're an idiot, and they're going to go away and they're going to tell everybody else that you're an idiot. You have been exposed. Move back to the door, run away, disappear. No one wants you here. And the stronger that ego voice gets, the more powerful its go-to messaging becomes. And it sort of is this cycle that becomes, it like self-perpetuates. The only solution it knows is the one that actually creates more of the problem that it's then trying to solve, pretend to solve. I'm not sure. You know, it's like, come on, man. Just need people to like you. Then this will, like, you'll be happy then. Yeah, let's get people liking you. This is all going to turn out okay if you can do that. So you start searching on the web, like, okay, right, what are all the cool kids listening to? What they're watching? What's the latest, like, gadgets that they're using? How can I fit into this? Or how can I look cool? What are they saying to each other? Where am I, you know, falling behind here? What do I need to get hold of in order to look like I'm supposed to? Right. Well done, the ego says. It's a good start, but still we're not getting much attention. We're not getting the attention we deserve, are we? Let's go on social media and post some, I don't know, photos about how cool you are. Let's pick a niche. What about like social justice stuff? Let's find a community in that area that we can fit into. Okay, yeah. I'll buy a t-shirt I can wear. People know that I'm like really into this. Then I'll do a little Instagram live video. I can wear the t-shirt when I'm doing that. What hashtags are trending at the moment? Perfect, yeah. People will really see that I'm, you know, on their side and into this, and hopefully, yeah, I'll get a lot of likes and stuff. People are going to love me for this. or the shrinker side, you know, that one that is kind of my go-to. Come on, man, says, what are you doing here? People are looking. Stop pretending you know what you're doing. People can see that you do not fit on this stage. He's right, you think. All these people are so much cooler than me. who am I kidding? I'm just a silly little kid playing make-believe around these really amazing, talented songwriters. Yeah, thank you. You are. That's exactly what you are. Well done. Sorry, I've got your best interests at heart. It's okay. Come here. The ego leads you home. Says, let's go. We'll go and watch something comforting on the TV. Crack a nice bottle of wine open. We've actually got the weekend here. We don't need to leave the house for for about 3 days. You probably don't need to talk to anyone at all, actually. So, yeah, don't you worry about anyone realizing what a fool you are. You've got a few days off that. Come on, buddy. I've got your back. They're kind of slightly extreme examples, but they're not. That is the sort of thing, I don't know, my ego talks to me about. Start listening out for that voice. If you start listening out for what it's saying and how it rocks up and where it rocks up, you'd probably be quite shocked at how chatty it is. I guess when it comes to finding and being from the place of our authentic self, it's a matter of connecting with its characteristics, with its kind of natural. I mean, I think of it's like a pure energy unconnected from those two sides of ego's desire and the ego's fear. As a voice, it's kind of our presence, our awareness. It's the infinite observer, the non-judgmental witness to us and to the world, to other people. It doesn't create stories of meaning around what we do, and it doesn't act in order to fulfill a story or a sense of meaning. It just kind of is. It's organic flow, it's creativity and it's play, it's pure joy. It's oneness with where we are and with what we're doing. When I was self-isolating last year because someone I'd been in contact with at work had tested positive for coronavirus, I bought a skipping rope in order to keep fit and get some fresh air during the 2 weeks that I was kind of locked up at home for. I could, go in the garden and skip. I couldn't go out for a walk or a run, which was quite kind of restricting, really. But yeah, I got this skipping rope. I thought, I'm going to do that. It'd be fun. And that week, I actually did a few things to I guess, keep myself entertained. Create a few little silly little videos. And one of those videos was of me skipping, doing some drum rudiments as a skipping routine. Now, drum rudiments are like, they're kind of like exercises that you do to get your technique kind of good, I guess, a bit like scales on the piano or guitar or whatever. But yeah, I was doing these drum rudiments, so little patterns like left, right, left, left, right, left, right, right, like a parallel, you know, that's called a paradiddle, and other ones. So it was quite hard work, actually. But yeah, anyway, I really just enjoy making silly little videos. I can spend hours putting them together for no kind of obvious kind of reward at the end. You know, even one that's like 30 seconds long, I find great joy in designing them, putting them together, creating them. And that video really came, I think of that as coming from a real place of true self, authentic self. You know, I was just in this pure creative play mode, doing something because it just genuinely made me laugh and gave me joy and gave me a sense of energy, I suppose, when I was kind of, yeah, in that place of where I could have been frustrated. And there was something about that creative energy that was really good. I didn't need anybody else to validate it. I didn't care if people saw it or not. At least I didn't during the moment when I was connected with it. And when I was connected with it, I was like, oh, I'm going to share that on Instagram. It's like a little insight, a little snippet of my silly self. And I don't really care whether people, you know, like it or not. It is what it is, and it's fun. And I thought, you know, I'm going to spread some creative play energy through the airwaves, see if you know, it just kind of gives somebody a bit of lighthearted, I don't know, entertainment. But then I don't know where it had been, but the ego voice decided to wake up. I don't know what he'd been doing up to that point. I'd obviously managed to kind of slip past him and get the whole skipping video done while he wasn't looking, which was great. It was quite useful not having him there. And I don't know, someone must have alerted him to the fact that I'd put it on Instagram. And so the next thing I knew, it was like, what are you doing, man? Like a kind of soft but concerned tone. I think that's what my ego voice sounds like. It sounds different for everybody. We were talking about this again as well in the book club, of like you can recognize your ego voice because it's maybe the sound of a parent. It's that voice. It speaks in that exact voice. For me, it's more of like what are you doing? What if people watch this? They are going to think you're an idiot. Like if professional skippers see this, or boxers, what if a boxer watches it? Your technique is so bad, they're gonna destroy you for trying to do something that you can't, that you're not very good at. Oh, and trying to be something you're not, like, do you really think you're a skipper? You know you're not a skipper. And out of self-abusive, morbid curiosity, I went and had a look at this stats, you know, just to see, okay, you know, well, who is watching it? I don't think I'm followed by any skippers, professional skippers or boxers. And then it was like, whoa, look, there's quite a lot of people have seen this now. I could see, you know, on the thing where it says who's been watching it. And then it's like, whoa, it's in like five parts. And why have loads of people only watched the first part or the first two parts in my Instagram story, and they've stopped watching the rest of it? Oh, they must hate me. They've watched the first part and they think I'm just a foolish little man child and turned it off. And they're gonna unfollow me. They're gonna be laughing about me, telling everybody about me, that everyone they meet today, they're just gonna be telling them how stupid I am. Sorry. What? Okay. Interesting. It was. I don't recall the conversation, that kind of inner dialogue exactly, but it was. That's the sort of thing that happens, you know. And when you're able to let go, or at least loosen the grip slightly that ego voice has, when you can see it as its own thing by observing it from behind, it kind of opens up some really interesting potential. And as I say, you might find that it sounds like somebody, a specific person, a family member, a parent, a teacher, someone. Who's just there telling you what to do in order to fit into, or the ego voice is telling you what to do in order to fit into what that person demanded from you at some point in your life. Or it might be more of a kind of fictional character, perhaps an amalgamation of different people who you figured you needed to impress or get approval from or acceptance from in order to be validated and be kind of seen as good enough or liked. And you might have a sense immediately about when this voice really started to gain strength. Like, was there a particular experience or an event that you kind of pinned a lot of hope onto or whatever, when it started to tell you what you needed to do or what you needed to avoid doing in order to fit in? And I guess you might be able to think of other places that it's spoken to you as well, like, and other things that it just sort of gets into your ear and nags you about. Like for me, when I first started noticing the power of my fitting in voice, it's really been over the past few years, I jumped straight to my music and songwriting. You know, like that is the kind of most natural place that I can be. You know, I can spend all day, every day making music, playing with sound, writing songs. It's really that major activity where time loses all sense of meaning for me. So I can, you know, take to a live stream gig and play for 2 hours, over 2 hours, and enjoy every moment, and only realize that I've played for too long because I'm starting to get a headache. That feels like 5 minutes to me. And I'm completely at one with what I'm doing. It's just the same when I'm in the studio, writing and recording and, yeah. And it's, it's that place where the ego just is not there. It has no place there, because it's there's no room for it, I guess. And to some people, it might sound odd, especially the kind of live stream scenario where I'm performing and people are looking and watching. And I've already said that my go-to ego voice is like, don't let anyone look. People are paying you attention. I suppose that's kind of linked, because it's the ego that stops me from doing that thing that I naturally connect with. Because it's the same on a physical stage, you know, pre-COVID when we used to do real gigs. And I'll be playing songs, I'll be on stage and just in a place of, if I've entered a place of flow, I'm all in it and the ego's gone. But there have been moments where the ego's got in. There are many of them, actually, in certain gigs where I can really remember like being unnerved and off guard. So would notice the smallest signs that obviously people hate me and want me to get off the stage. You know, I'll notice, oh, someone's just turned and said something to their neighbour. That must mean he's probably saying, isn't this guy crap? Or a person goes to the toilet, right? They've left, they hate me. Or someone's looking at their phone. See, the ego says, they think you're really bad, and they're really bored and they think you should get off stage and you've got no place here. And I know that the ego voice has been strong in stopping me from doing many things that I would have loved to have done, or it's pulled me out of moments where I would otherwise be in that place of true authentic self. You know, things that I would have loved to have shared, that I've you know, written with love and passion, you know, music and other things. You know, there's a lot of blog posts and videos over the years that haven't made it to light because the ego has talked me out of sharing them. And so these things that I felt, you know, really deeply connected to, and probably the things that carry a lot more weight and meaning than other things, because that's where the ego likes to speak most, when something is vulnerable and meaningful and therefore probably more valuable, and something that people are going to appreciate more. It might divide people a little bit more, but it's going to be more valuable in the world itself. The ego manages to talk you out of it, to sabotage you from putting something out there. Makes it about me. It makes it about us, not the connection, not the music, for example. When the ego turns it to a thing about me personally, it sort of misses the point and makes me a lot less brave. You know, I make music because I love it and I can't not do it. It takes me into that flow place and makes me feel connected to myself, and connected to all things in a weird way. The ego voice takes me out of that. It takes what we do from our place of authenticity and bends it out of shape, bends it into a kind of weird now, a thing that is less significant, and it creates a story around it. It tells us why, it shows that we're not enough. It brings shame to the party, either because we need more people to engage with it in order to prove our worth, our self-worth, or we need to not be exposed. We need to hide it. We need to dig a hole and bury it in the ground. So yeah, after we've started to kind of practice observing the ego voice, then what? If we're starting to go into situations and recognize, oh, there's that ego talking. What's he? He's trying to make me run away, or he's trying to make me like do a little dance and make everybody love me. He's trying to draw attention to me so that everybody thinks that I'm clever or whatever it is. You know, it says different things to all of us, doesn't it? But I really like Brené Brown's call to dig deep here. She uses the acronym DIG. Get deliberate, as in the D, it's not get, that's because I know that dig is spelled D-I-G. Get deliberate, get inspired, get going. So getting deliberate is about, you know, standing your ground. She talks about, yeah, don't shrink back. So not making yourself small, but not puffing up, not throwing on your armor and getting defensive and aggressive and bullshy. Just stand on your sacred ground, she says. And I guess this is about letting go of attributing meaning and stories or confirmation into what we believe people are thinking about us. To just be in the midst of this messy splurge of chaotic humanity around us, to hold our ground, to connect with our heart, to allow the world to just keep moving around us, because that's what it will do. Shrinking back and puffing up, they're what we do when we believe that everything is about us, that we are the center of everybody's universe. Either side of that equation, shrinking back, puffing up, whether we desire attention or fear it, we see everything through this lens that tells us that everything is about us. And oh, how freeing it is to know that it's not. People aren't thinking about us because, shock horror, they're thinking about themselves. I mean, isn't that what we're doing? What if everybody's the same? Yeah, they are. That just means, oh man, we can stand our ground. We can just be, I can just be me in this place. The ego is desperately trying to cling on here. No, no, you're wrong. If you do something stupid, people will be thinking about you. You can't tell me that people never think about you. Well, yeah, obviously. But the only way I would do something so incredibly stupid, this is an interesting thing to say. Should have thought about this before I said it. Is if I do the thing that you, ego, are telling me to do. Check and mate. Oh no, here he goes. Now, oh, he's flipping the chessboard over. He's throwing little pawns at me. I'm just going to sit back and watch, make sure he doesn't do anything too reckless. I've started thinking about the ego like this. It's like this little, I don't know what he is. He's like some little funny little guy. But it happened yesterday as well. Genuinely, I had a great moment of ego observation after writing a response to the forum thread about the book club session on this subject. And I'd spent 45 minutes writing this pretty in-depth reply to a question that someone had asked. And for some reason, when I hit the submit button for this reply, the site had decided to log me out and the message disappeared. There was no way to retrieve it. It was just like that. Off it goes. 45 minutes, totally down the pan, wasted. And I can't remember what I wrote, and I didn't copy it or save it or anything. I took a deep breath and when I was going to be like, oh, screw it, I'm not going to bother. But I thought, no, I need to do this. I'm going to go again. So I started my message with these words. Right, my ego is fuming. My true self is laughing playfully, watching my ego running around the front of my brain, smashing up little bits of mind crockery, throwing tables about and tying himself in knots. Me and my true self will just watch him for a bit, make sure he doesn't do anything too stupid. And yeah, do you know what? Like, it felt like a gift in some ways. It felt just being able to see it in that way and that reaction of pure, it was like a rage reaction. I can't believe that's just all that time is wasted. That's gone. Where's the arc? And, you know, you just want to like go mad. But it's moments like that that are actually a real gift in many ways. Like, my replacement message was shorter and more succinct, and it felt better than the original one. So I was glad from that perspective. It was less wordy. And also the fact that I'd been able to see my ego in the midst of it all and had this experience of, like, you know, having that encounter with it made it all the more, I don't know, poignant, I suppose, for me. It was a really helpful experience. So yeah, I mean, our ego voice can get us to do all sorts of things in the heat of battle, you know, in those reactional, is that a word? I keep asking that. In those moments of reaction, deep reaction, emotional reactivity to a frustration or a disappointment or to anger, to someone provoking us or whatever. Perhaps it says, like, see, this always happens to you, give up now. Or, right, whose fault's this? We need to get some payback here. Or whatever. Maybe our true self is there. And we can find it. And we can sit with it. We can observe the ego. When we put that space between the stimulus and our response, the thing that we're going to choose to do as a response, we can sit and just observe those things that are coming to the front of our head from the ego voice, what it's telling us about, you know, what does this reinforce about the story it wants to tell us about who we are and why we deserve this to happen to us, or why, you know, somebody else is to blame, or whatever it is. And we can observe the ego, we can chat with our true self about, you know, what do you reckon the ego's saying here? What's it trying to get us to do? Where does this come from? Whose voice is that? And the more space that we open to observe the ego, the more compassion that we might find for it as well, like to see it not as an enemy as such, because it does think it's got our best interests at heart. Like it's trying to protect us. It is that instinctive, the kind of monkey mind, the thing that, you know, it wants to look after us. It wants to keep us safe, but it's just not very wise. It like clatters about, doesn't it? It's noisy, it's clumsy, or at worst, as is the case for me sometimes, it's kind of snidey, and kind of, I don't know, it's quiet, and it's like, oh, dude, are you sure you want to do that? Because remember last time you did that, you were made to look really stupid. So just bear that in mind. But I don't like the idea of seeing that kind of figure as an enemy. It's definitely not someone to be left in charge of anything. Like I would not be promoting it to management or any kind of leadership role. But we also, it's not about trying to see it as an enemy that we need to destroy, because A, that's impossible. We all have the ego. We all have ego. It's part of everybody. But also, yeah, we can learn to converse with it and to really delve into what actually it is telling us that is important to us. Because often, as I said earlier, with that the whole reading between the lines of someone who says, I don't care what people think, that is the voice of the ego. We don't care what people think anymore, which is actually telling you that it does. But in the same way, we often find the true message within the things that we say and in the way that we try and convince ourselves of the opposite of what is probably true at a deeper level. If that makes sense. I don't know. Was that confusing? Just to finish with the other two dig deep points that Brené Brown talks about. The second one is the get inspired. So she says that courage is contagious. She quotes Catherine Senser, one of her friends, who says you have to be brave with your life so that others can be brave with theirs. I really like this idea of it's almost the contamination, the contagion, the viral implications of bravery. We're inspired by people who share their voices with the world. If we do the same, others will be more open to share theirs. What do we think when we see others sharing their work and their opinions? Does the ego speak up then? Listen out for that. Does it tell us something about us? We're envious. Or something about them? Judgment, which is really about us. And we say, wow, they're in a really lucky position. They're in a place that I am not. And so they're really lucky. And yeah, but they don't deserve what they have because they were in a better position to start with. They had more money behind them or whatever it might be. This kind of projection of judgment, which is actually about us. When we open the space to experience the bravery of others, to clear the decks for our own bravery and open up to connecting with those people that the ego wants us to envy and to criticize and to judge. Actually, some of my best friends are people that I probably, if I'm honest, envied and judged when I first met them, before I knew anything about them. There was kind of obviously something about them that drew my natural self towards them. But my ego was like, no, no. And probably because it was afraid that actually, no, you're going to be too good friends with that person, and you're going to become vulnerable with them and say things that, you know, I really don't want anyone knowing about you. I don't, you know, I was just trying to keep you safe. Again, isn't that the kind of truth that the heart of the ego, it pushes away some of the very stuff that we deeply resonate with, that we're drawn towards. And maybe it is just, it doesn't want us to get hurt. But actually, in so doing, it stops us from getting joyed, getting, what's the opposite of getting hurt? Getting healed. I suppose to some degree it might be an issue of healing. But it's not fixing that. It's just getting, I don't know, massaged. What's the opposite of getting hurt? I don't know. I'm throwing that one out there to you. What's the opposite of getting hurt? Maybe it's really obvious. Okay, and finally, get going. So make authenticity a number one goal when you're feeling vulnerable. This is what Brené Brown says. When acceptance or approval becomes the goal and it doesn't work out, it can trigger shame that says, I'm not good enough. If the goal, however, is authenticity and they don't like me, I'm okay. If the goal is being liked and they don't like me, I'm in trouble. I get going by making authenticity the priority. It's not easy. It sounds very simple. It's not easy. I suppose it's a mixture of all this stuff that we've been talking about and learning, okay, where is that voice of I need to be liked? When I go into this situation, my main goal is to be liked. Actually, listening to that and stepping back into that place, that space behind that voice, behind that goal, behind that demand, what the ego is saying to us. And to actually just observe as you go into that situation, to hold that space, to hold your ground, to not concede any ground, to not puff up and try to be something in order to be liked, and not to shrink back in order not to be, or in order to not be not liked. is that a suitable number of negatives? I think so. I think that was right. And so I'm fading out here. I'm losing control. But yeah, when we let go of the control that the ego has on our way of being, it creates more openness to this possibility, to this authenticity. Bearing in mind that authenticity is an ongoing intentional practice. It's not something that you either possess or don't possess. You're not either an authentic person or an inauthentic person. We're all people with the capacity to practice authenticity. When we show up to the world from a place of true self, from a place of wholehearted being, rather than that ego self, that fragmented, that pursuit of being liked and avoiding fear of not being good enough, then we open space to practice authenticity, which in itself is risky, it's scary, it's vulnerable, and it goes against every ego instinct within. But if we want to live our lives, if we want to be who we are, if we want to connect with the world in a genuine, authentic way that brings more play and love and courage and connection and compassion, something that actually feels worth it, if we want to be alive, then this is a pretty good starting place. Let go of what people think. If what people might think stops you from being who you truly are and turns you into something that you're truly not. And you know those things. I think we all have an instinctive, we carry that instinct of, we know the things that are bending us out of shape. And it's just a case of, I say it's just a case of, it's an invitation into listening to that voice, engaging that ego voice and just observing it and being like, interesting that it's saying that. Cool. Well, if you want to go even deeper into this with me, I'm not going to record it now, but I will be recording in the next couple of days a a patron exclusive private podcast, the extended play episode, just opening up this topic a little bit more, sharing some more of my own stories in this area. And if you're interested in hearing that and a bunch of other episodes, go to patreon.com/AndyMort and you can become a sustaining, supporting, gentle rebel patron. I sing a few songs on there as well. I do unscripted episodes, answer any questions that you've got for me in that kind of safe space. And it's, yeah, just $3 a month and you get access to the entire archive of past and future episodes. Not future episodes. They're not yet in an archive. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you get access to everything and everything in the future for as long as you are a Patreon subscriber. Okay, also, if you get a moment, the other best thing you can do to support the Gentle Rebel podcast and allow it to find the ears of other people who are searching for encouragement and support with the stuff that we are kind of looking at, which hopefully is just making the world a slightly better place, one kind of thought at a time, is to give it a good rating and leave a nice review wherever you listen to it, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Podcasts or whatever. Overcast, that's where I listen. I listen to podcasts like Overcast, which incidentally really confused me the other day because I didn't realize there was a feature on it. I think it's automatically on, which makes it removes like little silences. It's a smart, I don't know how it works, but basically as it's going along, it speeds things up. If there's a little silence, it speeds up the silence, so it makes less silence. I didn't realize it was on, and I had a podcast that was about an hour and 10 minutes that I was going to listen to, and I went on a run, and my run's about 50, or four, yeah, just under 50, or around 50 minutes. I go for a run on a Sunday morning. And this podcast finished before I got to the end of my run. And I was so confused because I could see this podcast is an hour and 10 minutes long. And there should be 20 minutes left by the time I finish my run. And it finished with about 4 or 5 minutes left of my run. And I only just discovered yesterday why that is. And so it's quite a relief because I'm not going mad. But yeah, it's got this Overcast app, and other apps probably have it as well. But yeah, it just speeds up silences. I've turned it off because I quite like silences. And I like to know how long a podcast is going to be, because at least, you know, when you see what length it's supposed to be, you can plan your activities around that. Anyway, if you hate all the little silences between words on this podcast, you can listen to it on Overcast if you want, and remove it all. You can speed it up as well or slow it down. I like slowing it down, slowing down audio stuff, because it just sounds like the person's really hammered. And they're like, it's the end of a hard night of drinking and they're trying to make coherent, and they usually make really coherent points, but at a very slow and drunk pace. Anyway, how did I get here? Please do rate the podcast and leave a review if you've got nice things to say, and share it with others on social media. So it helps massively to kind of get it out there and to spread these kinds of messages. So I'm really grateful to all of you who do support the podcast in that way already. Really appreciate it. And thank you to everyone who is already a subscriber on Patreon as well. It's so good to have that that support and that bit of community going on. All right, I'll leave it there. I'll be back next time with another episode of the podcast. I think it might well be an interview with Sarah Santacroce about gentle marketing, which is a really fascinating area, which I loved exploring. I think that will be out. Should be out next week, actually. Until then, do remember that you are an artist, that the world needs your art. Now go and make somebody's day. Goodbye. All the angels in disguise, we can be, we can be, we can be.
We can all be angels in disguise. We can be.